Back together again, you and I, chatting it up with all the big stories, Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today, where we kicked off the show with more revelations from D.C. insiders about President Joe Biden's fitness for office. Connecticut Inside investigator reporter Mark Fitch detailed recent arbitration decisions affecting the telecommuting policy for state workers. And Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by with her weekly update regarding a recent General Assembly special session.
You know, you cannot script. If you brought in some great comedy writers, some great drama writers, the best of the, you know, the Hollywood script writers, the TV script writers, the guys and gals that write all the monologues for all the late night hosts, you could not script the amount of sheer, unadulterated, two-faced lunacy that's going on right now in the American body politic. You know why? Because they got caught. For the past 2 years, at least half of the country has been saying, Biden's not right. God bless the president, but he's not right. There's something going on here. And that came from half of the country publicly. And a lot of conservative news outlets publicly. And what happened when that happened? Oh, this is just MAGA garbage. That Joe Biden, yeah, he's sharp as a tack. Oh, how things have changed. Get this. Can we, you know, with all due respect to the late, great Alex Trebek, Alex, I'll take hypocrisy for 1,000. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Tuesday that both President Biden and former President Donald Trump should provide the American public with test results regarding their physical and mental health. She said, quote, both candidates, oh, whatever test you want to put them to in terms of their mental acuity and their health, both of them. She said that on MSNBC with Andrea Mitchell. Pelosi said she believes it's a legitimate question to ask whether Joe Biden's poor performance at the debate Thursday night was just an episode or a condition. Ma'am, with all due respect, it's called, you know what the episode is? It's an episode of being over 80 years old. But all of a sudden, folks, I'm telling you, this is serious. This is not from a spoof website. This just popped in my feed from NBCNews.com. All of a sudden, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, well, you know, Mary, maybe cognitive tests aren't that bad of a thing. But when Nikki Haley said it, remember a bunch of months ago, Nikki Haley said, oh, cognitive tests, oh, she was lambasted. Although, oh, ageism, we were told, oh, this is just the MAGA extremists. Now, hey, maybe those cognitive tests, maybe they weren't such a bad idea. To which at least half the country is saying, well, no bleep, Sherlock. All of a sudden, that 90 minutes last Thursday night has thrown the American political establishment on its ear. Donald Trump, who is 78, has also faced questions about his mental fitness after he mixed up Pelosi with former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley earlier this year. Several business execs who met with Trump in D.C. last month told CNBC he was remarkably meandering and could not keep a straight thought throughout the event. Okay. We get that. That's news. But whenever that was brought up by Joe Biden, what did we hear from Karine Jean-Pierre and everybody in the White House? Oh, he's sharp. You should see him behind closed doors. Yeah, well, I guess we should, huh? I guess we should. And then we have this. And by the way, whatever your thoughts are on this, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And now, all the inner circle Biden people are now fessing up to what half of the country was seeing with their own. Well, the entire country saw it, and half of the country was willing to publicly say, oof, Reminds me of Dad, doesn't it, honey? Reminds me of your grandfather, right? We've all enabled the situation. Democrats turn on Biden's inner sanctum after the debate. Now the rats are coming home to roost. The senior team's management of Biden has grown more strictly controlled as his term has gone on. And again, I go back to my original thought last week when I joined you folks on Friday. Who is surprised by any of this? And it doesn't make Joe Biden a bad guy in principle. He's 81 years old. All right? He's I hope to make it that old with the amount of functionality that he still has. I give the guy credit. You know, the average male age of passing away in this country is, what, 78, 79? So he, you know, technically, if you go by the numbers, he is, you know, outliving, you could say, the average male here. But all of a sudden now, these stories are popping up everywhere. For God's sake, MSNBC sounds like Fox now. But it's hysterical, sad, maybe in that case, sadly hysterical, that all of a sudden you've got, you know, the Democratic leadership here saying, well, yeah, this is a problem. And shame on them, because there's no way they didn't know this. And this has put the United States of America in peril. I'm sorry. You don't think the folks in China and North Korea and Iran and Russia are watching all this and laughing at this and probably saying, hey, what can we do to stir the pot here? I mean, election interference, you know who's been election interfering for the past few years? The people who surround Joe Biden. Now, I get it. Presidents have said to have, declined in office, you know, right before FDR died at whatever 60-something years old he was. They said that he was getting severe headaches. He wasn't himself. People even knew back then FDR wasn't well. And then the whole thing with Ronald Reagan, he was given, I guess, his diagnosis, and they covered it up well for the past or the last year or so. But he left at 77 or 78 or whatever that was. But this story here I'm reading to you from Politico, and the story here written by several Politico writers. Over the course of his presidency, Joe Biden's small clutch of advisors have built an increasingly protective circle around him, limiting his exposure to the media and outside advice. An effort to manage the public perception of the oldest person ever to hold the office and tightly control his political operation. And yet, when mainly conservative media outlets and websites like Newsmax and Fox and other places would talk about this, that video was AI. That was altered. Shame on them. They knew what was going on. But inside the White House, Biden's growing limitations were becoming apparent long before his meltdown in last week's debate. Folks, we're talking about the leader of the free world here. With the senior's team management of the president growing more strictly controlled as his term has gone on. During meetings with aides who are putting together formal briefings they'll deliver to Biden, some senior officials have at times gone to great lengths to curate the information being presented in an effort to avoid provoking a negative reaction. Yeah, they've been reporting this for a couple of weeks. So they're not, they understand what's going on here, folks. They're altering. Now, the president is supposed to know everything, right? The good, the bad, the ugly, the pretty good, the fairly bad, the meds. He's the guy. The buck stops here, that old Harry Truman sign. And the presidential daily briefing and all this stuff is supposed to tell him, sir, here's the situation. But again, I read this earlier, and mainly it was coming out of conservative websites, and nobody paid attention to it. And now you have mainstream websites like Politico, I'm reading this from. Well, they didn't want to make him angry, so they left things out of the briefings. What? What? Listen to this quote. Listen to this quote. And folks, we're talking about the President of the United States. With all due respect, we're not talking about the Premier or the President of some third world country, with all due respect. One senior administration official tells Politico, quote, "It's like you can't include that. That will set him off. Or put that in. He likes that." This person told Politico, he or she continued, quote, "It's a Rorschach test, not a briefing, because he is not a pleasant person to be around when he's being briefed. It's very difficult, and the people are scared S-less." Spell it out, S-H, are scared S-less of him. The official said he doesn't take advice from anyone other than those few top aides, and it becomes a perfect storm because he just gets more and more isolated from their efforts to control it. That sounds like the angry old man, doesn't it? Or the angry old woman, or, you know, when you and I, mom, dad, calm down, and the agitation builds as the mental capacity declines. But we were told, you should see him behind closed doors. Boy, when he's engaged, he's right on top of it. Folks, do you understand what's happening here? Honestly, serious question. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I mean, there are memes going around on the internet, and if you know what this means, you know what it is. There are Weekend at Bernie's memes going around social media. Now the president is still alive and breathing, we know that, but you look at that and you say, yeah. And yet there are people enabling this, and those are the same people that are telling you Donald Trump is the problem. Really? Right now, though, our buddy, our pal Mark Fitch joins us from Inside Investigator. Check it out, insideinvestigator.org. Mark Fitch, one of the movers and shakers behind that, does great reporting and going to talk to us today about a story that I remember when it first bubbled up and boiled up. And I am glad that Mark wrote this because it's quite illustrative here. Hey, Mark, good afternoon. It's Paul. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Paul, and it's good to be on with you.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time today. We know you're always busy. Connecticut state agencies tried to limit telework in 2022, and they were overturned in arbitration. And I remember when this, Mark, was bubbling up, but I didn't really remember it now until I saw your story. So explain to my listeners what was going on here, because this was, I guess, one of the upshots of COVID here and the whole thing you found out through some Freedom of Information requests.
Sure. I mean, I guess you depend on who you ask, whether or not it's an upshot of COVID. But one of the things that we're all experiencing is a lot of people work from home now, mm-hmm. Coming out of COVID, and that includes state employees. So during the COVID pandemic, Governor Lamont said that, you know, basically the non-essential workers, people who could potentially do their job from home, were to stay home. And in December of 2021, the governor and the state unions reached an agreement to create a policy around working from home. Mm-hmm. What happened, though, and I found this kind of, I want to say by mistake, but it was included in a Freedom of Information request I had made, was that several state agencies tried to limit the amount of telework that these employees could do. So essentially, you know, how often they could work from home. They tried to implement what are called caps. You know, you can only work from home, you know, 3 days a week,
sure.
Or,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
whatever. So, but that runs against the policy that was agreed to. Under that policy, eligible employees can apply to work from home up to 5 days a week, really. But if they're required to be in the office any more than one day a week, they have the right to appeal that. Okay. And that's where these arbitration agreements come into play. Department of Social Services tried to do kind of a 60% cap. So, mm-hmm. you know, people had to be in the office 2 days a week. The Office of the Attorney General tried to split the hairs here. They're like, all right, well, you can do 40% routine work, you know, telework, and then 40% situational. Both times the arbitrator said, no, that's you're trying to limit these employees, and that goes against the state policy.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
No, Mark, I'm sorry, but just so I don't lose track here, my listeners don't. So the individual departments here, they were tasked with saying, hey, like you could have like DOT, DMV, Revenue Services. So they were tasked individually with coming up with a framework that said, hey, this could work. It's good for us. It's good for the workers. So one department could say X amount of time home versus in the office, and that would be different than the other department. Am I reading that right?
Not particularly. So
okay.
Eligible employees can apply.
All right.
And the departments can either grant, modify, or deny based on that worker's job description and what their responsibilities are. So, you know, if I want to work from home, you know, 4 days a week, and my employer says, well, no, that doesn't work for us, we're going to modify that to, you know, 2 days a week. They can do that, but I can also appeal that. And so what was happening in these cases is these departments were trying to do blanket caps.
Got it.
So regardless of, you know, really what the workers' need to be in the office during the week was, they're basically saying that, all right, you need to be in the office 2 days a week. And that went against the policy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the case of the Department of Transportation, what I found was what they call the materials testing lab. This is the lab that makes sure that the materials being used for construction and, you know, infrastructure and things like that meet specific standards. In this case, they said they were basically arguing that, no, you can't do that from home.
I don't know about you. Hey, Mark, I don't know about you, but I'm missing a couple of things in my concrete testing machine at home. Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, of course. but what the arbitrator found was that he didn't believe the Department of Transportation had done a thorough analysis as to how much of this employee's job could be done from home.
Mm-hmm.
Their argument rested on the fact that he does a lot of, you know, administrative work, you know. Punching in notes, things like that. And since the department couldn't show quantitatively that this would have an impact on the material testing lab's ability to do its job, it was overturned. And so those employees were granted, it was only like 1 day of, you know, work from home mm-hmm. time per week, but still it set the standard. Or if you're going to say that, you know, people need to be in the office, you have to be prepared to show why they need to be in the office, and you have to be able to do it in real concrete terms. Your boss can't just come in and say, well, no, we need them here. This is an obvious thing. No, you have to actually sit down and say, this is why, and you know, this is why we need them here.
So it doesn't wash, and I guess, Mark, you're saying for these agencies to say, well, it's better for teamwork if we have them all in the building as many days a week as they can. So what the arbitrator is saying, that's kind of an abstract thing. That's not, you have to be more precise and excuse the term, concrete than that.
Yeah, I mean, and they have to show that there would actually be a negative effect on the work output. And, you know, frankly, with this was all happening in 2022, I don't mm-hmm. even know if they would have had the ability to show that, because people hadn't been working from home in that department yet. So, it's kind of hard to show that there's going to be a negative effect. And so, yeah, it that got overturned. And, you know, according to the emails that I had, you know, a lot more employees started applying for it. But, you know, it was one of the things that was discussed when the Lamont administration was trying to work out this deal with the unions was, you know, should there be agency-wide caps? And that was rejected. And it just seemed, according to the arbitrator's decision, it seemed that, you know, some agencies had already decided, well, we're gonna cap this and yeah. Just kept moving forward with that policy even after the agreement was reached.
So, Mark Fitcher, there are definite winners and losers here. Did the governor and his office lose? Did the state unions win? Was it kind of a wash? And how have things shaken out over the recent history since all this was going around in 2022 or so? Where do we stand now?
Well, I mean, obviously the workers were the winners if you look at the grievance decisions, whether or not that translates to the people of Connecticut being winners, which is really should be the goal of government, really remains to be seen. But to be fair, the state has been implementing a lot more software so that we can do things without having to go in and actually be in front of people. Mm-hmm. So obviously the DMV's made a lot of changes trying to update their software so we can do a lot of things online as opposed to going in person. That's always nice because nobody wants to stand in line. But when you get into some of these other issues where it's, you know, DSS and the people who are distributing the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP benefits, do they need to be in the office or, you know, do they need to be in that front-facing position? That's kind of hard to say. But there have been some issues that have come up in the past around Department of Children and Families and things like that, where, you know, workers trying to check on the status of families through, you know, Zoom or what have you, doesn't really work out too good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those situations where you need to kind of be in the home to know, to understand the dynamic going on there. You can't just, you know, talk to somebody on a screen and get a good idea. So, there's certainly room for work at home in state government, just like there is in the private sector, but it just can't be for everybody all the time. And that's what that policy tried to address. The fact that, you know, some of these agencies wanted people in the office more often than others, and tried to implement that just shows that, you know, you can't always do what you want, especially at the agency level. And these employees have a right to appeal and they can win. So the only time they can't appeal is if they're requesting to work from home all the time. So anything less than 80%, though, they can't appeal.
Interesting stuff and good stuff as always. Folks, check it out for this story and more great stuff. InsideInvestigator.org, InsideInvestigator.org. The story we're talking about today, Connecticut state agencies tried to limit telework in 2022, but were overturned in arbitration. Mark Fitch, the guest. Mark, good to hear from you. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Mark Fitch there, InsideInvestigator.org, one of the great satellite news sites that are currently all around the state, the Inside Investigator, the Yankee Institute, the Connecticut News Junkie, the Connecticut Mirror, the CT Examiner, plus all the regular stuff. You've got no excuse not to be well informed. Megan Portfolio joins us. She of the blog, The Hartford Portfolio at the Yankee Institute, is with us for her weekly chat every Tuesday around this time. Ms. Portfolio, good afternoon, ma'am, and how might you be?
Why, sir, how are you today?
I'm living the dream, and again, it's too late for law school or med school, so I might as well just keep doing this. That's it.
No, you're living the dream.
That's it, I am. It's the greatest job on the planet, of course, next to yours. But you have some thoughts on something that I was kind of giggling about last week, this special session up in Hartford that was supposed to be, Megan, we were told, there's nothing going to happen here. You know, you got to cross the T's and dot the I's. And then we get some funky things, at least two of them that I spotted, something about selling a query on water and playing with the car tax to where some people might actually be paying more. There's a shock, huh?
it's like they just are not serious about doing away with this car tax. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I called it a sham session because this really should have been NBD, no big deal. I should have had it on in the background while I'm working away. Oh, no, because they lawmakers decided to cosplay as kings, I guess, maybe because 4th of July is coming up.
Yeah.
And they send out this 140-page bill with 8 completely different topics. Instead of just, I don't know why, it's just impossible for them to do things the right way. Have 8 different bills. It would have been easy for everyone to go through. But no, they have to have this big aircraft carrier bill, 140 pages, that they dump, you know, morning that the session is meeting. Like, I'm not a speed reader. Most people aren't speed readers. I can't read through 140 pages in a matter of a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's really, and you've read the bills before. They're really dry and
boring. Oh, it's legalese. It's all written in legalese.
I mean, I need about 4 to 5 cups of coffee to get through one of these bills. But this is another instance where they just decide they don't want to follow any of the procedures, and they're going to introduce legislation, and it's on this aquarium water deal where it's some regional water authority is going to be allowed to bid on the project. I know nothing about this. I've never heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been up. It was never talked about during the regular session. I have a million questions. Like, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, and that's why we have public hearings. That's why we have a committee process. And then we could have had answers. Like, is this going to be a good thing for ratepayers if the Regional Water Authority can purchase Aquarian? I don't know. It could cost them more. I don't know. So that's one of my beefs. And this is getting to the point where it's too comfortable for them to do this, because they did this last session at the end, you know, at the very end of the session. I've talked about this ad nauseum, the striking workers bill. They just invent these things. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, we're just going to do what we want to do. We don't care about what the public has to say or who this implement, you know, who gets hurt by this or who benefits from it. They just pass bills without even going through the process. So that was my first major beef with the bill. And the second is this car tax thing.
Yeah.
And there, so on paper, it's technically, I can't even say that. It's a tax increase. In 2022, Ned Lamont decided he was going to come up with this new way to assess vehicles because during COVID, the prices just went through the roof. So assessment values went high. People were seeing an increase in their property taxes. So he devised a system where it would be based off of the manufacturer's MSRP, manufacturer's suggested retail price.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then they would do 80% of that, and it would be a declining scale. Every year, it would be less and less and less. Well, that's great. And it sounded like, hey, that's fine if it's more predictable for towns, more predictable for the taxpayers.
Sure.
I'm okay with that. We didn't even like weigh in on it because it was just like, oh, okay, this seems like a good idea. Well, members from like the Council of Small Towns and like CCM, they came out and said, this is kind of a good idea and we like it, but we need to vet this because we don't really know like if this is going to be beneficial, if this is going to increase taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And the law, you know, these lawmakers, they're just so much smarter than the rest of us. They don't listen. They passed the bill, and now here we are.
And they're saying that, and when Marty Looney and some other people on the Democratic majority side were pressed on it, talk about, Megan, a let-them-eat-cake answer. Well, yeah, some people's taxes might go down, and some people's taxes might go up, but that's up to the town. Yeah, but you're enabling that because you're going with an 85% assessment on the vehicle. You know, the laissez-faire kind of, the peons' attitude about this, Megan, just drives me nuts. But the thing is, it's only nuts like you and I that follow this stuff that actually know what's going on. You and I, right? You tell people about this, and what's your first answer? How did that happen? I didn't know. When did that happen?
The genesis of this was in 2022. They had the bill. It passed. Well, then they realized, I don't know if they just realized they hadn't had it all figured out yet. Mm-hmm. So they extended it for a year to go into effect October of this year. So it was supposed to go into effect October of 2023. Well, they, for whatever reason, they extended it. Great. And then they introduced the bill this year. to change the percentages.
Yeah.
And it mirrored the omnibus language from the bill that went into special session. So it passed the House, no problem. Then it gets to the Senate, and some guy, I forgot which one it was, decided, hey, I have a great idea. Let's allow the towns to eliminate the car tax altogether.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great, but you're like the last day of session. There is no way that's going back to the House amongst all of the other things, all the other, you know, special interest groups are crying about that they want to get done. There's no way that, like, why would you do that?
Why would you just wait
for the next session and do a bill?
Well, you and I both know, Megan, I think, why. And the guest is Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute. We know why, because what's coming up in November? Oh, an election. And then they can put on their nice, glossy, very expensive, you know, mailers there that jam into my mailbox all the time. Hey, I advocated getting rid of the car tax when you know it's a poison pill that's never going to work. Now, Megan, I'm going to say something that you're probably going to want to reach through the phone and slap me with, okay? But it's crap like this that, not quite, but I'm edging toward there. I almost want to, maybe not a full-time legislature because then you would have lawyers and nobody else there, but get rid of this short session, long session garbage and make it like 7 months or so or 8 months, because this jamming stuff in at the end of the regular session and a special session, it infuriates me, and it's not right. It just screws the voters.
It's like Bush League. It's nonsense. And there is part of me that agrees with you. And this leads me into a second point that I had, because when I'm talking about advocates crying, like the Greenies are all crying right now because they want a special session. No, they're part-time. That means I don't want to hear from you unless it's an emergency or unless it's like a committee that you're required to like be on. I don't want to hear from you until January. Like, you are not full-time. So no, you don't keep coming back with these special sessions. None of these things. There was one thing on there about commercial, the way they had reclassified commercial vehicles.
Yeah.
So all those people would have been screwed. I don't know if I can say that on the radio. So
you can.
I
say that all the time on this show. No, we're getting screwed a lot by this, but go ahead.
But that was important. And that is something that you come back for. All of this other nonsense, this stuff can wait till next year. And it's like, if you want to be full time, then be full time.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to do that, stay part time and stay out of our lives for like half the year, because we don't need, like, we want less of you. We want to hear less of you.
Yeah.
The more we hear from you equals more money I have to pay out.
Yeah. And like they say in the broadcast business, less is more. And you're a writer and you know this, when you use fewer words, each word or each thing I say or you write has to carry more weight. Yeah. Maybe I should shut up about a full-time legislature. No, no.
I know, right? I don't think I can deal with them a year round without drinking heavily.
You would never get a break from CT. You'd have CTN on like 24/7, like you don't have it on now. Oh my God, jeez.
I mean, it's to the point where I'm like, did I watch that on CTN or CTN in my dreams now? And then I got to go back to the tape and watch it.
Megan Portfolio writes the Hartford Portfolio blog. Check it out at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Megan, thanks. Have a happy week. Careful around the fireworks, and we'll talk on Monday, okay? On Tuesday next week.
Happy Independence Day.
You too. Thanks, Megan. Megan Portfolio there.